Okay, so just as far as a little bit of an introduction goes, because we need an introduction for this week's parsha, we need to know like what it is that we're up to. So I think one of the ways to understand the book of Bamidbar is not to look at it as a bunch of independent episodes, but to see it as episodes which are interrelated, which means it's not like one thing happened and that was isolated and in a vacuum and then had no impact on anyone or anything else, quite the opposite. Things that happened at one point will then come and have an impact on what's going to happen afterwards. I can say this in simpler ways, or I can say this in more complicated ways. Of course, you know that I'm going to try to say it in a more complicated way. So let's start with something simple. This week, Korach follows Shlach, which then you just have to ask yourself a very simple question. To what extent did the frustration of the realization that they were now going to be in the desert for an extended period of time impact them in terms of the what happens next? Which means, should we be terribly surprised when we find that there is some type of rebellion when there was prior to this something which we could possibly call a failure? Now, when I call it a failure, then you heard me say something I didn't say, therefore Moshe failed, and therefore, no, there's a failure over here in the sense that this trajectory, if you want to talk even in a geographic sense, it's just to go from point A to point B, that's not happening. And instead, they've turned around, and they're going out of the way, they're taking a detour. And more than that, not just geographically, chronologically, the time frame that was supposed to allow all of this to take place has been changed dramatically, changed 40-fold. So now, to what extent does that impact what happens? And I said that that's all very simple. But what I'm trying to get to is I think that that's not exclusively what's taking place. I think that there are other things as well. So that's introduction number one. Introduction number two is something which on previous years I have discussed at length, and I don't want to do that right now. So I'm going to sort of say it, but not go into it as much as we could. But what I will do is tell you that there's an element of this that we will go into. So let me explain. In Parshat Korach, there are multiple parties that are involved, and there is some fluidity and a connection between one and the other, but there's also independence. So one of the things we don't know, which we can guess, we'll start on something which is harder to judge. Datan, Aviron, and On, do they all have the exact same interest, or are they coming from three different perspectives? I don't know how to answer that question. Maybe you do. I don't know how to answer that. But let's go a little bit further. Korach, Datan, and Aviron, do they have the same issues, or are they coming from two different places? Okay, maybe we can at least try an answer to that. Then, aside from Korach and Datan, Aviron, and On, who quickly falls apart, and that's also something we've discussed previously. I think I entitled that shiur Saved by a Hair. So if that's meaningful to you, then good. Then on top of that, you have the 250 people. So how do the 250 people then relate to the various others, including Datan, Aviron, and On, and Korach? But then on top of that, you have another 14,700 people, which that's really what we're going to be moving towards today. How do they relate to the others that have been involved in this? So now, I think it's very easy to say that there are multiple, and here's the word which I'm not sure if I want to use or not, independent attacks. But they're also interdependent, which means the easiest way to try to bring evidence that they're different is very simply follow the punishments. If the punishments are different, then apparently the crimes were different. If you have some people swallowed up by the ground and other people by which, by the way, happened this week in Jerusalem, if you didn't hear about this, there was a sinkhole by the parking lot in Shaare Tzedek Hospital, which was very on time. It was almost like the old joke, if you don't know it, fine. Speaking of Parshat Korach, but it happened during Parshat Korach, which was excellent timing on whoever is responsible and should go to prison for this. But you have some people get by fire and some people being swallowed up, and you have some people with some other plague that goes and hits the camp and one person who saved. But if you then look at all of these punishments, then that should lead you to the conclusion that obviously then there are different things which are done, but there nonetheless is some kind of independence because all of this seems to be taking place during the same, shall we say, episode or larger episode which takes place. So with all of that, let's try to begin and let's try to make some sense out of all of this. The essential argument that at least we have from Korach, and we also have this wonderful dangling, I don't know what, v'yikach Korach, and we never know what exactly it is that he took, the wonderful midrashic idea that he took a talit from, which was kulot chelet, is also something which we probably need to understand. I'm not convinced we will today. But he gathers all these people, and posa gimel v'yikalu al Moshe, which by the way sounds like violence, al Moshe v'al Aaron, v'yomur leim rav lechem, you know, you've done too much here, ki kol ha'eda kulam kdoshim uvatocham Hashem, that all of the community are holy and God is within them. Now, there is somewhat of a non sequitur, umadua titnasu al kal Hashem, why do you place yourself on top of everybody else? You know, that is not necessarily related to one another here. If you ever need a Dvar Torah to say, by your bar mitzvah, I know that that's the most useful kind of things that I can do, is give you very short Dvar Torah that you can use, that are usable. So, I mean, the other day somebody did ask me, can you give me like a Sheva Bracha, then he picked like an absurd Parsha. No. But anyway, something you can say by your bar mitzvah is that when a young man turns 13 years old, then he is just as valuable for a minyan than the greatest rabbi in the world, which means there's a certain, what we can call democracy over here. We need 10 men. 13, you're considered to be a man. Doesn't make a difference how much you know. Doesn't make a difference if you know Mishnah, Gemara, all of Shas. Doesn't make a difference if you're Ravadi Yosef or Moshe Feinstein or this 13-year-old bar mitzvah boy. You're both only counted once during a minyan. Now, why? Because you can help create a Davar Shebikdusha. How do you help create a Davar Shebikdusha or Davar Shebikdusha? How do you do that? Because, now I can go back to the argument of Korach. Why? I can say exactly his words. Ki kola eda kulam kedoshim v'tocham Hashem. So now I can count you for a minion. Does that mean that now I can let the 13-year-old kid start writing Shelot and Tshuvot? Or even more importantly, Tshuvot? Can I let him start Paskinin? Can I let him sit on the Sanhedrin? Just because he has Kedushah? Which means there is, you know, our second non sequitur. The first one is V'yikach Korach. The other one is, sounds great, ki kola eda kulam kedoshim v'tocham Hashem. Right? U'madua titnasu al kal Hashem. What's exactly the connection between these things? Now, skipping a little bit, and we will try to answer some of this. Skipping a little bit, going to Pasuk Chet. Vayomer Moshe el Korach, Shimon b'nei Levi. So I want to now pause again at this point. He turns to Korach and he engages him in conversation, and we have to realize something. Korach is Moshe's cousin. Now, when I said that there's this interrelatedness between the various episodes in Bamidbar, so here's one which may be not as obvious, but once I say it, you'll say, yeah, that was obvious. Of course I knew that. And that is, there was a previous time that Moshe was attacked by family. And that was the attack from Miriam and Aaron. So, of course, now what I'm suggesting, or even asking you to consider, is to what extent is that personal family attack, which by the way, is devastating. Because it's one thing if a Datan and Aviron attack you, especially they become like the worst people in the Chumash. I'm pretty sure in previous years called them the Cheech and Chong of Sefer Bamidbar. Those of you who have no idea what I'm talking about, you're probably better for it. I see those who are shaking their heads over there. But if you're attacked by Datan and Aviron, that's one thing. But if you're attacked by Miriam and Aaron, that is much more devastating, which means that the attack by Korach, who is very close, he is a Levi, he has a great position, he's somebody who's close to Moshe, and he's somebody who, again, is family. If you just think for a moment about the Korban Pesach, it's very likely that the Korach family together with the Moshe family sat together and they had their Pesach Seder together. Am I exaggerating and embellishing? Yes, but you understand my point. My point is that this is not the same as some of the other attacks, and therefore we need to bring that episode into our consciousness now as we're moving forward and just thinking about what is taking place over here. And there is, again, a different kind of response between Korach versus Datan Aviron, because it gets to Datan Aviron, then, and note, when it comes to Datan Aviron, Moshe sends them, they said, Lo na'aleh. No, we're not going to come. Which means Moshe Rabbeinu just now asked you, I know the principal says, please come to the office. Some of you have a great deal of experience with this. And over here, it's Moshe Rabbeinu saying, come. And they say, Lo na'aleh. So you really do get the point of the chutzpah that they have. And then just to make it more real, their continuation, Hame'at ke'eli tanu mi'eretz avat chalov u'dvash lamitenu ba'midbar, ki tistarei aleinu gam histarer. Now, essentially, their argument here is an echo of a previous argument, and that would probably be more likely to the episode of the spies. And so again, I brought in source number two, the Miriam and Aaron, and I didn't have to bring it. You know it, it's there, and you. But it's also important what they say, because again, I want you to consider this as a continuation or something which helped create the situation. Harak ach b'Moshe diber Hashem, halo gam banu diber. Go back to the claim, ki kol ha'edim kulon kedoshim b'toch Hashem, maduot ne'asu kal Hashem. Don't you realize that these arguments are really more similar than perhaps we've noted before? That they are essentially saying something very, very similar. Miriam and Aaron are saying, listen, Moshe, you're not the only prophet. You're not, by the way, just because he's not the only prophet doesn't mean that Moshe is different. Just because everybody is holy doesn't mean, again, that Moshe is different. So when I said that there's a similarity over here, it's not just that it's family, there's also a similarity within the argument. When we get to the Datan Vaviran argument, again, you go back to Parshat Shlach. You know what, maybe we'll hold off on that for a second. And I want to read, but again, keep that in mind. The argument of Datan Aviron, you've taken us out of a land with flows of milk and honey. Essentially, they're saying we would have been better off to have stayed in Egypt. So we have to again ask ourselves, where did we see that? So if you look at source number 10, Perek Yedalid, that all the people cried that night. V'yalonu al Moshe v'al Aaron kol b'nei Yisrael, v'yomor leim kol eda, lumatnu be'eretz Mitzrayim, v'bin marazeh lumatnu, right? And continue on. V'lama shem iviotonu al eretz hazot. Which means the argument to say we never should have left Egypt and we should go back is something which is back there. And by the way, just in case we never noticed it, the continuation then is let us get new leadership. Let us kill them and let's get new leadership. So I'm going to say it again, that what happened back there in Parshat Shlach, which is not all that, you know, far away, and what's happening now with the Datan Aviram, we just have to realize that there is some kind of an impact from the past, which is again, coming back, to, is being resuscitated over here. The second thing, or I'm not sure what we're up to, maybe the third thing that I want to note is something which I find really intriguing in the Midrash HaGadol, which is source number 3. So it starts off and it says, Vayekulu al Moshe v'al Aaron, bov amdu lefnei Moshe v'al Aaron, v'amekulanu mikudashim b'Sinai. Now notice what he does. We were all made holy at Sinai. Why? Shenema v'tiyu v'atem tiyu limalmechet kohanim v'goy kadosh. Essentially making what I think is a fascinating argument. Don't you remember that at Sinai, God spoke to all of us and God said, I am going to make all of you into a holy nation. By the way, pay attention then. If that's the case, that means that every single person has holiness in this nation. That is one of these things which again is true, but does not help us at all in declaring then who is going to be the leader. Because if everybody is holy, which is true, what does that have to do with the conversation? Nonetheless, it's the continuation of this Midrash HaGadol, which I find really interesting. It then says, Uvetocham Hashem, Kulanu Shamanu Enochi Hashem. All of us heard. Now, again, that's interesting. See, I could take it in a couple different ways. We all had prophecy at Sinai. It's one of the things which the Netziv, I think, really notes. Ukeshekibalnu et Torah, lo shabanu la ba, lo truma, v'lo chala, v'lo tzitzit, v'kol ha'gzerot halalu me'atzmachem. Essentially saying that we were there at Sinai. We heard revelation at Sinai. And by the way, this is also conveniently forgetting something, that at Sinai they apparently say to Moshe, tell God to stop speaking to us and have him speak to you. So they're deliberately forgetting that. But the argument that it's putting forth is saying, we stood at Sinai. We heard what God said. There was nothing there about, and now essentially all that you need to do is to look at any kind of conversation that takes place afterwards. We can throw away the book of Vayikra. We can throw away all the mitzvot we've met so far in Bamidbar, because they're saying we were at Sinai. God essentially said two things. If you want, he said 10 things, okay? I'll give you 10. He said two things. He said, I'm God and don't worship idols, don't have engraven images. Where did you get all this other stuff from? Why are you making up so many laws? Which would actually be the first attack on rabbinic leadership and claiming that rabbis are guilty of Baal Tosef, even though they may be actually telling you over something which Halacha Moshe Mi-Sinai is taking place over here. They're saying, Moshe, you made all this up. We were at Sinai. We heard God speak. Why are you adding things to the Torah? Why are you guilty of Baal Tosef? Which, by the way, they shouldn't know that there's such a thing as Baal Tosef, because that was added afterwards. But nonetheless, this claim is interesting. I think that what this is focusing on is the end of last week's parsha. Look at source number 4. Vayomar Shem, you should be very familiar with this. Vayomar Shem Moshe le'mar d'bel b'nei Yisrael v'mar t'lehem v'asulam tzitzit. Okay, we know this. This is another of these added mitzvot. Which, of course, goes into our whole thing about the talit, which is called a tchelet. Which is part of their problem, why there's so many. Make sure you do all of these commandments. That this is how you will be holy, by doing all of the mitzvot. And what are they saying according to what the Midrash HaGadol just now told us? Ki kol ha'eda kulam k'doshim v'tocham Hashem, God is in my spirit, I don't need to do mitzvot. Which means I can be a good Jew without doing any mitzvot. It's all within my heart. By the way, the reason I love this Midrash HaGadol is I strongly suspect that some of us at some point in our lives have met a great deal of people who've used these kinds of arguments. I don't need to do all the quote-unquote minutia. I don't need to do all of these things. I am a Jew in my heart, and that's all that's important. I don't know exactly what a Jew in the heart is. Is it somebody who's eaten too much schmaltz and gribbin? Is that a Jewish heart? That I'm not sure. But nonetheless, the argument being put forth over here is fascinating, because it's claiming, we are all holy. And again, this is a direct attack. See, that's really part of what we always need to be paying attention here. As we're listening to the Rishonim or the Achronim or the Midrashim, and they're telling us things, who are they perceiving the attack against? The way the Midrash HaGadol is saying it, the attack is clearly against Moshe. Moshe, you're making things up. God never said those things. We stood at Sinai. We heard what God said. He didn't say this. On top of all that, we are holy people by virtue of standing by Mount Sinai. We don't need all these other things that you've made up. And why are you, now I'm embellishing, why are you trying to control us by giving us more and more and more things that we need to do? We don't need these things. We are already holy. Now, what's interesting then is that it's not necessarily the kind of attack that sometimes we imagine that Korach is doing. Why are you in charge? I want to be in charge. It's that, why are you in charge in such a way and doing such a bad job of this and making things up on the fly? Why are you implying that the Jews don't have holiness innately and they need to do all of these things? And then the result of all of this may very well be, okay, now let's replace Moshe. But the attack over here is my internet connection is unstable. So my point is that there is an attack over here against Moshe, and that's what we need to be careful about as we're reading this Midrash. Let's try to go a little bit further. Rashi's understanding of that we're all holy. And again, what I just now did, which should have been interesting, I hope it was to play off their argument, is that we are all holy, right? Kulam kedoshim b'tocham Hashem, as opposed to the end of last week's parsha, v'hayitim kedoshim l'elokeichem, by virtue of doing the mitzvot. And they were saying, we don't need the mitzvot. Now, there are those who use the end of last week in order to explain this week, but that's generally the v'yikach, and what did he take? He took the tchelet. But what I just now did is I tried to show you a much more pshat-oriented, literal understanding of what took place over here without going into this explanation that they all then dressed up wearing tchelet or so on. Okay, Rashi says that we are all kedoshim because we all stood by Sinai and we all heard God speak. The way the Maharal in source number 6 understands this is very similar to what we just now saw in that midrash, and he says, "O imperisho kulam shemu b'sinai anochi v'lo yelecha im ken koleda b'madrega echat." We're all on the same level. Now, again, notice what I said before. Isn't that the argument of Miriam and Aaron? Aren't they saying that we're also prophets? God speaks to us as well. And over here now, Korach, having heard Miriam and Aaron, you notice I just made a jump. Korach, having heard Miriam and Aaron say, listen, we're basically the same. We're all on the same level in terms of prophets. He's saying, you know what? That's a great point. We're all on the same level of prophets. And we all heard God speak at Sinai. So my point is to pay attention to the other episodes in Bamidbar and then to read them as we continue. The Chizkuni reads it differently, and he says that we're all holy, and he narrows it considerably. Ki akol eda kulub gadoshim heim habechorim. It's the Bechor, and again, he looks for a literary connection, and he says, of course it says, kadeshli kol Bechor. Again, he's looking for this idea of holy. So we saw the Midrash go back, malechet konim v'goy kadosh, and the Chizkuni is going back to kadeshli kol Bechor, because we're all holy, he's looking holy. But again, according to Chizkuni, he gets limited substantially. Or significantly. The Sforno is something that I've quoted numerous times because I like it. He understands Kulam Kedoshim, and now you'll realize it's much closer to the Midrash I just now read to you. He says, Kulam Kedoshim, not as we are all holy, but rather we're all holy. And let me explain. Mikaf Rego Va'ad Harosh, from foot to head, that we have been given rules and laws about every single thing that we need to do. How to put your shoes on in the morning, how to go to sleep at night, how to get up in the morning, and everything in between, how to eat, what to eat, how to sleep, who to sleep with. Every single details of our lives have now been taken over by this directives that you've given us, and therefore the Kulam Kedoshim is a complaint. There's too much holiness over here, which again I'm pointing out that the Midrash HaGadol already said that in a different way. You're making all of this up. And we were already holy before all of this, but this is saying it's slightly different nuance. There's too much holiness over here. Now, this also may be connected to source number 9, to Balotcha, when the people started to complain and a fire burns in the camp, and then the people have this ta'ava. The asafsuf have a ta'ava. As we've noted, ta'ava is never a good thing to have. It leads to bad things. And they say, and they started to cry, Mi yachlenu basar, gam b'nei Yisrael v'yomru mi yachlenu basar. Who's going to give us meat? Zacharno et hadaga, remember the fish that we had, asher nochal b'mitzrayim chinam, they had free fish there, I don't know why, but they did. Et hakishuim, now that's the most implausible argument in the entire Torah, that they missed their kishuim. What is this kishuim? I don't know, how do we translate this? Something terrible. It's, I forgot how you say it in English. Ve'eta avatichim, that I understand. Ve'eta chatzir, I don't think I understand. Ve'etzalim, I do understand. Ve'eta shumim, yeah, I understand that. But they're complaining about all these things, but what about the meat? They could have eaten meat at this point. The only thing was, according to the Gemara in the desert, the kind of meat that they could have eaten was only kadshim, was only a korban. They were not allowed to eat chulin, regular meat. So essentially it's the same argument again, saying we don't want lives that we have to be careful with everything being holy. We want to have regular lives. So as I said, the various previous episodes from Bamidbar have not disappeared. They're coming back at us and they're becoming concentrated and they're coming back at us and they're stronger than they were before and they're just being reworked, but they're not disappearing at all. Going back to Korach in source 11, and we moved on a bit now. We've moved on to Perek Tet Zayin, and let's take it up over here. V'deber ele idale mor surna me al ohale. Now, in the meantime, what have we missed? What we've missed is that we're told that Moshe suggests that 250 people should come, they should come and bring the Ketoret, and let's see how that's going to work out. Meanwhile, Moshe prays to God that the earth should come and swallow them up, right? Moshe says to this congregation, Suru nami al ohale anashim arishem imale, like, stay away from these wicked people, v'yaltugu b'kol asher lahem, and don't touch anything of theirs, pentisfu b'kol chatatam, which means they are contaminated and all of their things are contaminated, which means that you need to stay far away to this. So my father's going back and wants to know if this is the focus on the Ten Commandments exclusively is perhaps somehow connected to Christianity. The problem is, again, you take a Medrash like Medrash HaGadol. Medrash HaGadol is coming out of Egypt. It's post-Rambam. And I would kind of doubt that it's trying to explain that kind of an argument. But of course, that's possible. Going back to what we're up to in source number 11. So stay away from the people, and also it says don't touch any of their things. Otherwise, you get involved. I'm going to come back to the things because I think it's quite important. Right? And what happens is, V'zot tedun ki Hashem shelachani, which actually clarifies a great deal, because Moshe perceives, this is part of what I think is obvious when we read this carefully, is the attack of Datan, Aviron, and Korach were all against Moshe. And that's why he says, now you're going to know that God sent me. The issue is the me, which Moshe. I think the 250 people are an attack against Aaron, or maybe something else, but that we'll see in a moment. So, then now you'll know, and let's just continue with that a little bit. The earth opens up in Pasuk Lamed Bet and swallows them and everything of theirs, all their rechush, which is also interesting. Nothing could remain of them. They all get swallowed up. V'kol Yisrael asher sivavotehem nasu l'kolam v'ready screen ki amru pen tivlein arts. They were terrified that this will happen to them as well. V'eish yatsa me'et Hashem v'tochal et chamishim u'matayim ish makrivei haktored. And I don't know if it's simultaneously or almost simultaneously, we have now another episode taking place, and now the 250 people are attacked and they are consumed by the fire. So, and that's something that we still need to think and understand. And this, of all the things I'm saying today, this is obviously, I think, the most obvious one, because it reminds us of source number 12, which is not in Bamidbar, but it happened in during the time of the Midbar, and that is Nadav Avihu, that they bring a Ketoret, Lefnei Hashem, Eish Zara, Asher Lotziva Otam, Vateitza Eish Lefnei Hashem, V'tochal Otam, V'mutu Lefnei Hashem. And they died, which actually is going to lead us with a little bit of a problem. And the problem is going to be, why did Moshe tell the people that this is what they should do? Was it trying to intimidate them, in a sense, to get them to stop? Or for that matter, why do they continue? And what kind of responsibility does Moshe have in terms of the deaths of those people? In Source 13, we've moved over to Perek Yud Zayin. That's interesting because we've moved over from Aaron to his son, which may also be part of the argument. Okay, Aaron's going to be Kohen, so why is there nepotism? Why should his son be a Kohen as well? So the fact that he's involved may be quite significant. But what does it say here? V'yarem et ha-machtot mibein ha-srefa ve'et ha-esh zurei ha-ala ki kadeshu. Now, this is the point which is absolutely fascinating, and we need to understand it. We'll read one more pasuk. Et machtot achataim ha'ele b'nafsham v'asu lehem rikui pachim tzipoi l'mizbeach ki kriv l'fnei Hashem v'yikadashu v'yu la'ot l'fnei Yisrael. Hold it. Why, when it came to all of the possessions of Korach and Datan and Aviron, it all gets swallowed up and all of that, nobody touch it, nobody can go near it. But now, these people who are called sinners, take take the things, take and let's use this for holiness because it just now somehow got involved in holiness. Now, there could be a very simple halachic reason for this, but nonetheless, this is going to cause a problem in perception by people that are observing this and watching this. And let's move on a little bit so we can make sure that we understand this. And bring about forgiveness or kapara, atonement for the people, and stop this magefa. Because now there's a whole new magefa. The whole new magefa is that there are people that are complaining, and what we're told in Pasuk Yudalid, and this is another 14,700, aside from everything else, and essentially what happens here, other than the fact that it's stopped by Aaron, but we just need to also understand what happened. And then after all of this, we have in Perek Yud Zayin, in Source 15, we're told, okay, now everybody from each tribe bring a mateh, bring a staff, and let's see which one flowers, and then it's going to prove that Aaron is the one who is really supposed to be Kohen, which of course we have to ask ourselves a question. If Aaron already brought the Ketoret and it was accepted, why in the world are we still trying to prove to people that Aaron is the Kohen? Wasn't this all already proven? So my point is that we have multiple episodes over here, which are all sort of woven together, and it's very easy to weave them together, but the question is again, what is the connection between the two? So let's try as much time as we have to try to read through some of the Mefarshim and see how they nuance it, but there are going to be real big differences. First, the Rashbam, and the most interesting will be the Ibn Ezra, but first we'll do the Rashbam. The Rashbam tells us that the people complained, right? I think I glossed over this too quickly before. And let's, because this is what causes the plague. So let's make sure we got this. Source 14, Pasuk Vav, right? Yud Zayin Pasuk Vav. Vayalinu kol adat b'nei Yisrael mimachrat al Moshe v'al Aaron lemor, atem hamitim et am Hashem. They said, you've killed the people of God. Now, how different is this from the original claim that all the people are holy? Now, again, Korach is dead, Datan and Avir are dead, the 250 people are dead, and now there's other people saying, you killed the people of God. So I'm going to ask again, is this the same argument or is this a different argument? And now the plague, this is when the plague comes and Aaron has to go running around with the Ketoret to stop the plague. So Source 17, the Rashbam, Atem Hamitim et Am Hashem, Al Datan Vavir and Habluim Anu Modim Shachatu. So they say, we're willing to agree with you that Datan and Aviron were terrible people. They were despicable people, and it's good that they die. They're wicked. These people died like Nadav Avihu. And let's go back again. Nadav Avihu died lifnei Hashem, and there's something positive about this. Atem haraktem otam shetziveitem laktir ktoret. You ordered them to do this. Why did you use this as the test? Why did you command them to bring the ktoret? Essentially, you killed these people. Now, if that's not bad enough, now let's look at the Ibn Ezra. Atem hamitem, hatam ma raya haita zot shevet Levi hanavchar. Exactly, what was the proof that Shevet Levi was chosen? V'nevchar aron lekohen gadol. V'yitachen shebitfilatchem o b'chachma sheyadatem saraftem hamakrivim. Either you prayed and God answered you because you're some kind of a wizard, or you did some kind of magic. You did some kind of thing with wisdom and you caused them to die. You put lighter fluid there, you killed them. Now this is fascinating because they're accusing them of being underhanded, either Moshe and Aaron or Moshe especially, you're being underhanded, you did something. Rav Chaim Palti, al tam amitim am Hashem, lefish nisrafu al shei krivu ktoret yachid, v'ya ktoret zara, aval Aaron ba'arumato, he kriv ktoret tzibor, lefichach nitzal. This is fascinating, what he just now did. He said there's a difference between the two. Aaron brought the regular Ketoret, which was the Ketoret of the Tzibor, and therefore nothing happened to him. By the way, part of the problem is that you can't bring a Korban Ketoret as a Yachid, and each of the individuals brought it as a Yachid. Now, there's a lot to argue over here, but essentially what he did is he took a clever halachic argument, and he put it into Moshe's mouth, and he's essentially following up on the Ibn Ezra and saying, you killed these people, because look what you told them to do. The Sforno does something similar, although he does it a little differently. Shamarti lem shina subik torah she'enu ru'i shektirena ela hamakriv olot hatamid vayalachem lenasot b'tzvachim aruim lekohanim rabim yachad. You should have given them something else that a lot of other people can do, and essentially saying that you used your halachic knowledge over here to kill them because there could have been other ways of doing this. And all that I could say is, and so on and so forth, what we have among the Baalei HaTosfot going along the same kind of approach over here, saying essentially you used your knowledge to kill them. And I mean, we'll just look at the end of the Hadar Zakenim, just for example. V'atem hochachtem sh'aron gadol mehem. So you prove that Aaron should be the Kohen Gadol. How did you prove now that they shouldn't be Kohanim? Because you didn't prove that. And now, just to understand where he's getting, again, it's all the Baalei HaTosfot are going in the same direction. Look at 24, the Chizkuni, Atem Hamitim Atam Hashem, Ayidchem Nitridu, you killed Chamishim Matayim Bechorim. No, he adds another thing, because he thinks they're the Bechorim. We already knew that, really. Hamukdoshim lo vodami yitziyat Mitzrayim, v'lo hayir lechem l'psola b'charot l'achnis ha'levim mekomam. The big problem here is you never should have put Levi there, which means what we want is that they should have been there instead of the Bechor should... Okay, Aaron should be Kohen. But we don't need the Levim. We could have had the firstborn in each tribe. The Ramban also... Over here, we'll go towards the end of the Ramban. Okay, we already should have believed in Aaron back from Parshat Shmini. Same thing as Zechizkuni, that they wanted that the firstborn, why? They wanted representation from every single tribe that they should get their day. Listen, it's not a terrible argument. You know, you think about politics in Israel, where we have enough problems in terms of politics. Maybe I try to explain to my kids on Shabbos, we were discussing in America that we have actually representatives who represent a district, congressional, senators, and so on. In Israel, you don't have that. You vote for a list, and then you get all kinds of lackeys who aren't on a list. Most of them you never heard of, and they don't have to answer to you at all. They don't know who you are. There's no relationship. You can't call your congressman over here. Well, you can, but it'll be a long-distance call. V'hine yitloninu, when we had to complain, atem hamitem otam, you killed them. Shenatatem ha'itzah hazot shiakrivu k'torit k'koanim. So he goes even further on the same point. He says that the 250, they were the Bechorot. They wanted to go back to the role of being a Bechor. It's enough to be a Levi. Fine, Aaron was chosen. Why did you give them a Kohen's job to prove the point in terms of the Levim? So it's interesting. Again, what we really note here when we work backwards, it seems like everyone has their own argument what was taking place over here, and that does need to be worked out. But we also note something else, and that is that what it is that they were arguing that Moshe did is a little bit different from each one. In Source 25, the Siftei Kohen explains, they didn't complain about Datan and Avir. And by the way, the Rabbeinu Bachaye says they complained about both. So I just didn't want to skip that. 26, he said, Achar shenaseh behem shnei dinim bli avis reifa. They were upset with both, according to Rabbeinu Bachaye. But the Siftei Kohen says, "V'lo nitrabal b'liatan shel korach l'datan avir." That was okay. We've seen that before. Elo tzrifatam shel matayim v'chamishim ish. That's what bothered them. "V'lo amar lahem shechume eish me'al mizbeach." Again, technically, you did it wrong. You had them do it wrong. And then he says at the end, and they look at Targum Onkelos, I think the Ramban did as well, "Aten gar mutun." You caused it. "V'amru." Am Hashem Lomer, and you killed Am Hashem Lomer, Shehem Tzadikim Gmorim, Sheima Yurishaim Ayu Nivlaim. That if they would have been wicked, they also would have been swallowed up the same way that car, which means he makes this distinction, those who were swallowed and those who were swallowed by the fire. Swallowed by the fire is like Nadav and Avihu, they were Tzadikim. Ubifrat Kishisham Usha Tzivakorish Baruchu, Sheyaseh Mim choteim tzipoy lemizbeach. And once we heard that they that what they brought is now going to be included in the mizbeach, amuvadai ilu hayu rishaim liu lehem lemaskeret avon elahim tzadikim v'tengaramtim lehem amita. Which means that now we realize that this, again, there's multiple episodes over here. This episode, I said, all the possessions of Datan, Aviv, and Korach get swallowed up. But over here, it gets becomes part of the Mizbeach, and this he uses as part of the argument. I want to get to really one more thing, and I think that we'll stop with that. The Panim Yafot. Panim Yafot is Pinchas Alevi Horovitz, and he writes, Od Yesh L'Faresh, Source 30, you know, once Moshe gets upset and he says the words that he says, he causes this calamity to take place. But I'm skipping a little bit, and he writes, you're the ones who killed them. You punish them. What was the whole argument over here? That Moshe, you didn't have to take it so personally. You could have been mochel. By the way, where did they get that from? Where was Moshe mochel, most likely? And it didn't help, by the way. Going back to Aaron and to Miriam. They spoke about it. What does the Torah attest in that context? That Moshe was the most modest man. So for the most of Moshe's the most modest man, they're talking Lashon Hara about him, and he doesn't even feel it. He's a Navi, we're also Naviim. And Moshe's okay, you're also Naviim. Halavai, there should be more Naviim. Moshe is not impacted by what they say. And that's what I think is fascinating. Again, he doesn't articulate it the way that I said it, but I'm just connecting the points here, is that after that episode takes place, what happens? So Korach now says, oh, Miriam and Aaron can talk about Moshe. We can also talk about Moshe. Moshe is the most modest person, so he's mochel. It didn't help Miriam. And by the way, it may have helped Aaron, which itself is really interesting. Aaron doesn't suffer at all from all of this. Aaron is involved in this. Nothing happens. Why? Moshe's mochel. He doesn't care. So they're going back and saying, so why were you so strict on these people? Why now are you, is it your kavod which is killing these people? So I'm saying is that it's almost impossible to understand this claim unless you go back and realize the claim or realize what had happened in this previous episode. The other thing that some of the commentaries point to is that we don't find a commandment that God ever says to Moshe, this is what you need, or to Aaron, this is what you should tell him to do. Tell him to take the Ketoret. The Netziv, and I brought a lot or too many points from the Netziv over here all the way through, he argues this. He argues that, in fact, that it was all Ruach HaKodesh. Moshe knew what he was supposed to do. God gave him this understanding that he, in fact, that he should tell them to bring this. And Moshe didn't do any of this on his own. Quite the opposite. But in terms of Moshe being, shall we say, either makpid or not makpid, or Moshe should have been forgiving or not, I want to read something which I found really interesting, which continues along the same lines. And it's from a book that's called Meshivat Nefesh. It's source number 35. The author is of Yochanan ben Aaron Luria. And he writes, Kikol edem kulam kedoshim. And he says this right from the very beginning of the story. Yesh kan laharich, sheyesh li zaher bekvot hatzibur, sheshchina shriya ala tzibur. Shere Moshe Rabbeinu Adonai Nevi'im, laka b'shvil shezilzel b'tzibur, b'mushamuna hamorim. Right? Now he goes on to tell you lots of interesting gemarot and stories about how holy Am Yisrael are and how you need to be so careful with them. What a fascinating takeaway from the whole story. His whole takeaway is over here, oh yeah, Moshe, you really should have been more careful with Am Yisrael. Now let me just explain what it is that he is focusing on. Along the way, there was a turn of phrase that we may have missed, and we're just going to sort of leave this as an introduction for a future episode. Let me just go back quickly and see if I could find it. In back in Source 15, Pasuk Kafei, Vayomar Hashem El Moshe. And by the way, I mean, they're also interesting to check how much God is speaking versus Moshe speaking. Vayomer Shem Moshe, Hashev et Mate Aaron lefnei ha'edut, lemishmeret la'ot lebnei Meri. Now that was part of what he was hinting at, even though he didn't say it. When Moshe says, Shimuna Hamorim, that's exactly what God says. The people are rebellious sometimes. You need to give them a sign. You need to be able to communicate to them. Of course, the question is how you do it. But taking the staff and put it there as a sign to this rebellious people, Moshe is actually going to say to them, you rebellious people, and what's going to happen? It's going to cause the demise of Moshe. And what he's really pointing out here is that there's this whole argument against Moshe. And again, to say that Moshe should have been more humble, and what a difficult argument that Moshe should be more humble. How can anybody be more humble than Moshe? Moshe should have been more forgiving. But we do find Moshe taking maybe a different kind of a mindset here than normally does, because Moshe doesn't perceive this, I think, as an attack against him as much as he perceives this as being an attack against God, and therefore he suggests what it is that he suggests, and he ends up stopping it. But nonetheless, we have over here an episode which is, shall we say, devastating. You have, and it's multiple episodes. It's multiple episodes which converge together, and some of them cause the other ones, which again, you have Dathan and Aviram with their own, poison in their minds and their hearts. You have Korach coming from where he's coming from. You then have the 250 people who most of the commentaries we saw have a great deal of sympathy for them. On top of everything else, their deaths are much more like Nadav and Avihu, where we kept noticing with Nadav and Avihu that there's something which is attractive about how they died, to die lifnei Hashem. And maybe the one thing that we didn't pay attention to before then is that somehow the 250 people in the death, somehow it ends up getting converted into building the Mizbeach, which then causes people to conclude, oh, they really were holy. And keep in mind, that's part of the issue over here, is one of holiness. The other thing that I try to show as much as possible today is that the other episodes that have taken place in Bamidbar are not over. Every terrible episode just keeps coming back at us again, and it comes back and it metastasizes. It gets worse and it gets worse. And therefore, we never finish an episode. It just what we have instead is multiple episodes. And therefore, maybe that 7 days Miriam stays behind and that's all over. No, it's not all over, because now look what Korach did with the same thing. Look how the same arguments are coming back again. Look now how over here, okay, you need to speak to these people who are rebellious sometimes, but Moshe, how you go about doing it? Now, who am I to give Masur to Moshe? But we know that that's actually what happened at the end, when Moshe ends up getting angry and going and using the staff and then saying, Shimuma na Hamorim. So what we see over here, and essentially what my whole argument today was, and I think could have been done a little bit more, but I have compassion for you, is essentially this interconnectedness between, on the one hand, the separate but related episodes which play out in Parshat Korach, but on the other hand, how they bring back other episodes, both from Vayikra going back to Nadav and Avihu, all the way through various episodes that have taken place. And essentially what I did is look at all the things that have happened. Look at the people that have complained for meat. Look at Miriam and Aaron. Look at Nadav and Avihu. Look at the Meraglim. And notice that all of that has come together and is right here beneath the surface in this week's Parsha. So therefore, it would be a mistake in my mind to read Korach by itself. Oh, look, there's another problem over here. No, there's another problem built upon all the other problems that take place, which is essentially what we have in life, is that old problems don't go away. They just seem to come back and come to us in worse and worse ways, which means we really need to figure out how to end these things, but I'm not sure if we ever do. But Korach, the Parsha of Korach, therefore, is so interesting because it's not an independent story. It is an interwoven story, then multiplied by being interwoven with all the other stories which have taken place. And I think I've illustrated this as much as possible. Don't worry, I did not say anything about this under the chuppah. I said other things under the chuppah tonight. And again, I apologize for being late. It wasn't my fault. It was the bus from Tel Aviv's fault, because it got there late and somehow beat the sun setting. And it was, shall we say, quite interesting. Do we have any questions? Are you able to speak, or have we shut you? Okay, you can speak if you need to speak.
I can go.